Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Deep Thoughts. Today, I'm cracking one of these brand new bourbon sticks my dad gave me. He sent me this, looks like a case of dynamite, 25 of these babies. So he's officially a sponsor of the show now. These things are so cool. So I thought today, go over a post that I made on Twitter. And the post really derived from a friend of mine who is probably one of the most empathetic human beings on planet Earth, to their detriment, almost. And that's a lot of us, right? We care so much about others that, you know, you go through these phases of realizing, I think, what I'm about to say. So the opening pitch is this. I have tobacco stuck to my teeth. I don't think one can or has changed the world at all with a social media post. And that being qualified is probably Twitter. Instagram is not really supposed to be used for anything political, but Facebook, I don't think it's been done. But there's a caveat. The caveat is that as long as what you were posting is a negative, a hate-filled post, and I don't think really a lot of people that listen to me do this at all, it's not going anywhere. Someone is sick. You want to give them advice. If you do it in a negative way, wait for them to post what they're doing, and you say, or someone says, you're so stupid, do this. Boom, you're cut out of their life, and you could have the cure to cancer. You just lost your opportunity. And you might think, well, yeah, of course, dude. What's so brilliant about that statement? All right, pause the video and go look at Twitter and tell me per capita of everything that you see posted on that hate-filled Sith dark side, dark force site, satanic, whatever you want to call it, man. There's nothing positive going on. The only thing positive going on is some, you know, like, what is it, the Dodo website trying to catch your eye with a kitty video or something. And even they barely post any of that stuff because they know it's just a hate-filled platform. The other one is that, okay, take the world, and some of you are too young to know this, and this is not a patronizing, you're too young to know this, it's just historical. And if you do know this, then you are an exceptional young person. I can tell you from America's standpoint, and usually any of the Europeans that would visit here, we weren't a hate-filled world like 3 decades ago. The 90s made a lot of people depressed. But in the 80s and down, back towards maybe some other hardship in the past, like maybe the Depression or something, post-World War II up to, I'd say, the mid-90s, and probably the early 90s, to be honest, there wasn't a bunch of hate-filled stuff going on. And now we are 3 decades into this sludge. And so if you were to debut without any deep state, big tech agendas trying to make you hate constantly, right? They got you hating race stuff. They got you hating gender stuff. They got you hating cancel culture stuff. And not you necessarily. But prior to all that chaos that's being inserted into the narrative with these tools, if we had created something cool like this, and there actually were things like this for people who are old enough, remember forums back in the day that used modems for like geeky nerd things. And I sadly realized just watching Computer Chronicles, the old television show on YouTube, that was from 83 to I think 2002. As soon as modems came around and forums came around, I think by 1988 on that show, a guy said, you know, we got a problem with underage pornographic material being distributed on forums. I mean, it's just as soon as we come up with a medium, they show up and they get into it. It's almost as if they were the ones that funded it and engineered it, and then we can just do what we want on the side. But the main purpose of it has got to be some horrible thing. But we used to have real friends in the world. It was amazing. You didn't get phone numbers of people you didn't know, and you know why? One, you wouldn't call anybody you didn't know. But two, they typically lived outside of your prefix and your telephone number, and that was the only call that was free. So take area code, that was definitely going to cost a lot of money. And then your prefix kept you protected. So if you had the same area code and same prefix, mine used to be 316-431. Now I think it's like 620-431, back where I used to live. But you could call anyone in town and just sit on the telephone forever, no cost. Just pay your bill at the end of the month. Second, you change any one of those first six numbers, you started paying. And so you never, you know, messed around with people around the world sort of thing, right? And now you can call anyone in your respective country, and pretty much, I mean, at least in America, you can call anyone in this country for free. Just, I mean, pay your bill. But no extra costs, right? Why am I mentioning that? Well, if we had brought this whole thing together without these nutballs on the side, and didn't have someone telling us to hate each other, then we probably would have had a really good time with these platforms and shared a lot of great content. Now, we do attempt to do that between the lines. I think Instagram is probably the most pure platform, and it's the easiest one to manage because you're supposed to be posting your life. Now, there's a lot of housewives that post, you know, weird saying memes, and they don't post anything of their own, and they never get any friends, and they can't figure it out. And even if you friend them, you immediately mute them because there's nothing there for you. You want to get to know your friend. Show me where you live. Show me what you look like. Show me your car. Show me your kids. Show me whatever you did Tuesday night, something like that, right? Taco Tuesday. That's fun. Of course, there's a commercial element to it. People managing their businesses and that sort of thing. That's cool. Again, positive. It's all positive. It's all real. But today, what's gone on? You know, again, a lot of things I talk about need a setup, and there's a little bit of repeat from other episodes. So Project Mockingbird is a CIA project launched in the mid-50s to co-op every single reporter in the world that could influence you and your thoughts. Because the networks were boiled down to, you know, Dan Rathers and Walter Cronkite and Peter Jennings and those type of people at the national level, which, you know, consequently, if a European were to watch American news, we know that they're going to be watching one of these heads of state. So they get co-opted. They get pulled into things like the Council on Foreign Relations, otherwise known as the CFR. They get little decorations, little status increases. They feel like they've accomplished something because in the end, they know they're just journalists. And for whatever reason, that's not enough. That's not enough of an accomplishment. The more they get older and wiser and start to get their own opinions because they see enough decisions made and some made poorly, they feel like they're potentially an influencer. You know what? I probably could get into foreign affairs or whatever, domestic issues. So they get decorated into this. They co-opt celebrities like crazy. And the more the celebrity came from a ghetto, all you got to do is put a little metal around their neck and you got them forever. And what's so nuts about that is it's like the noose, man. Woof, right around your neck. Enjoy this. Do what we say. And they get calls. You're going to promote Dr. Fauci on your Instagram, convincing your followers that this health regimen that he's espousing is all safe, that everything he wants to do to control your followers is good. Do it. Yes, a boss. There's dozens and dozens of people doing that. And it's sickening, man. It's absolutely sickening. So at the local level, local news didn't exist for quite a while, and then it finally spun up, and then it was instantly co-opted into this personality news, right? Worship the person at your local Los Angeles news, Kansas City news, New York news. And then all they got to do is control that one bottleneck person. And then they control what you hear. Repetition is brainwashing. So, man, they control the script and everything. All right. So we know that by 2004, my research revealed only four corporations owned everything. And they take all their feeds from Reuters AP, same place. Associated Press and Reuters. Purchased in 04. Reuters bought AP. Oh, man. Total freaking control of everything we hear if we need to paint an image in our mind of what's going on around the world. So that's before any social media really sunk its teeth in anything. One of my old bosses brought me into Facebook in 2009. I'd seen it. They had hired some comedians online to do some pretty funny sketches. I didn't really know what it was. I knew what MySpace was. Wasn't really into that because I was too busy. Friendster I never got into. I built people's personal websites so they could have a presence online, mainly celebrities, right? So there was nothing that any out-of-the-box platform was going to do to pull in eyeballs. So we created sexy animations and just cool stuff. Then these social media platforms come out, and we have to take a look at how they came out, because there's a string of nefarious processes that made these things possible. They make you think that these things organically come out, and I'll tell you what the way the pattern works, because we're going to fold that news mockingbird thing in at the right moment, because it's merely an overlay on top of these systems. And most of you know most of the stuff I'm saying, but it's important that we remind people who are online trying to be activists, go live your life, would you? It's not that you're not an amazing person, and it's not that you don't have something wonderful to say, but no one's listening. No one's listening. Whatever people believe right now is what they're going to continue believing, young or old, because the old game of organic thought process is long gone. They're on top of your kids, almost literally, the second they're born, the second that you subscribe to break up the nuclear family, either get divorced or mom's got to go to work, otherwise mom is not a good woman, right? Unbelievable. And then your kids come in completely pre-indoctrinated. So whatever happens after that is, if you can change your kid's mind after you've released them into the system, you're really lucky. You have a good connection with your kids, or they're just smart. Now, you need to understand, like, I was in the Bay Area when Silicon Valley, when the internet did its launch. I checked my first internet email in 91. I saw my first website in 93, coded my first website in 96. But in 96, I also went from not knowing anything about how to program it. And I'm only giving you this background so you understand where I was. So as I comment, you understand my perspective is deep, all right? I start off January 1st, 1996, not knowing how to program a website. Just the HTML, let alone anything else. By June of that year, I was giving a presentation to a 600-person room, standing room only, like a bunch of people sitting, but the whole thing was lined around the back, debuting my web server, my web client, that did all kinds of wild stuff, like look up either your address or looked up your zip code or your city and state, literally going to the post office website, scraping information out of their CGI, their gateway interface, and bringing it back and displaying it. I displayed my FTP app that looks just like Transmit today on the Macintosh. I debuted my email package, which had full enclosures, full progress bar with POP3. POP3 was only invented like the year before. So I went from zero to megastar on the internet really, really fast. Got all my art lessons from Dr. Ozone. I was doing full full-blown 3D animated websites by the end of the year. And I think by the end of 98, I had won David Bowie's Side of the Year. My chat engine that I wrote myself was Prince's official chat room from Arista Records. So I went really fast. I knew exactly the entire pipeline from what turned out to be Apache in the end. I wrote my own Apache sort of server back in the day, all the way up to the client stuff. And then as JavaScript matured, I knew it all. Today is nothing more than almost a 4GL subset on top of everything that I am a master at doing. Okay. I tell you that, so as we move forward, I have a perspective of the internet that is literally from it being an embryo all the way up to it being what it is today. When I look at web pages and websites, I see the whole thing front to back. I was a chief engineer on EA.com back in the day, $320 million website. I saw Friendster come up. And again, it just didn't do what we needed it to do. It was cute, didn't have a hell of a lot of followers. I think recently it got purchased by Penthouse. Probably 4 years ago or so. I think they just sat on it and killed it. I watched MySpace come up. And MySpace was the very first thing that I think had a chance of becoming a big social media site. And it did. It became gigantic. I have this funny story that the first employee, a very good friend of mine I hired for my video game company, I literally had to let her go because she was spending all day on MySpace and trying to hide it. I let her go. I gave her the $2,500 we had in our bank account. That's all we had in the bank account. I said, here you go. You can have all the money we have. And I then went into her computer and found the $40,000 invoice that she forgot to send to our biggest client at the time. And so we were in really good shape right after that. But that's how engrossing that was, right? And this Facebook thing happens, and I don't really know that it's happened. When I was in the pharmaceutical business, I sat and watched Google debut their search engine in the campus next door. So I was like, okay, this is weird. And they were like, hey, this is a neat search engine. Meanwhile, we had AltaVista, we had Yahoo, we had a ton of them. What they do is they, being the dark forces of the world, they will take something that's organic like Yahoo. Two guys, I believe from Stanford, that put together a search engine that became the top search engine initially, right? They like those stories. And so then they synthesize that reality and pick two guys and say, you guys are going to be the founders of this product. How'd you like to do? Oh, that's great. But there's a little teeny company next door called InQtel. IN-Q-Tel. Look at their website. It is a above board tool development company for the Central Intelligence Agency. They're very upfront. That's what they do. Okay. Well, in the last 3.5 years, we have discovered that the second that Facebook goes live, DARPA cancels a project that's basically trying to do the exact same thing. The CEO of InQtel quits InQtel, having given Google the first $100,000. I guarantee it was a lot more eventually somewhere around the way, right? He goes over to Facebook, becomes, I believe, the chairman of the board and raises $20 million. Story behind Zuckerberg? Oh, it's real simple. They created him from basically from scratch, giving him this story that he created probably one of the most nosebleed websites in the world, which is like a rate a girl picture, right? You saw the movie. Why is that movie made? You ever ask yourself? Well, because Facebook's really popular and people want it. No, nobody gives a shit. That is to push into history a bunch of bullshit. He created some, you know, rate a girl on campus thing. Dude, you couldn't graduate high school in my high school if that was the only coding that you wrote. And this supposedly is some Harvard graduate. Ha 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 ha. Hilarious. Okay. No difficulty whatsoever in creating such a thing. I could have made that in 3 or 4 hours back in the day. And so could everybody else in the Bay Area, right? But they play that to your, you know, your community that doesn't know anything about the net. Oh, man, he's a genius, man. Mm-hmm. Then we have a problem because Facebook's got a competitor called MySpace. MySpace is bought by, was it Murdoch? He buys MySpace. He buys a product. And then what does he do? He also bought, I believe, IGN. He buys MySpace and basically fires everybody and cancels all the improvements to the site. Okay. Let's put this in perspective. Let's say MySpace is the OG company called Mercedes-Benz, the dude who invented the car. And Facebook comes out and it's BMW. Pretty decent product. But you're the OG company that really got this ball rolling. Yeah, there was Friendster. But there was also a guy on a tricycle that was 9 feet tall before, you know, Mercedes came around. But you buy Mercedes, which is the equivalent of MySpace. You have the complete ability to re-engineer MySpace and kick the living shit out of Facebook. Why? Because you have millions of customers already. You want to learn a little bit? We'll go look at Facebook and just rip them off. Why not? Why did he buy that company and destroy it? Because that was a plan to begin with. What's easier to run, a monopoly or a duopoly? They wanted a monopoly on this whole thing. Facebook, there's this part in the movie. I think they dramatized it as he said, he wanted to call it the Facebook. I forget what famous person supposedly said, you should just call it Facebook. The whole thing is to scrape your face. You get into the face recognition database. And you put in all your vital information. You're married, you're not married, where you're from, when you're born, all this crazy stuff. We all fell for it before we figured it out. You put all your family photos in there. Now they're scraping all your faces. They're scraping all the GPS, time of day, where you were. And oh my God, this thing knows everything about you. Up to the point that you cease putting your personal information up there and just start posting stuff that's interesting to you. Like I do. An album. A video. Somebody playing a bass guitar who's 12 years old. Stuff like that. And it's not telling them anything about me other than, hey, he really likes funky music. So then you get Twitter. Very, very interesting spinoff. I thought Twitter was going to die. Twitter was already a feature that was on Facebook. Post your status. What's Twitter? It's just the status without any of the other features. I mean, you could put some media in there if you like. You can link to other media. But I don't think it had it when it first came out, 140 characters. I don't think it had like previews and cool stuff, right? But that was a boiled down apparatus to disseminate information. And consequently, at 140 characters, greatly reduce your ability to have an attention span. Which is why we get people watch these videos and go, man, you need to make your videos shorter. I understand. You're still in the system, whether or not you realize it or not, right? So Google, in my lifespan, was in beta for 10 years. Because I saw it in 93, used it in 93, and it didn't come out of beta until the end of 2003, when public the next year. I also watched them take all my clients from being number one in Google, because I built their sites correctly and keyworded them properly, and my buddy's site, it was number one in Orange County for his particular keywords. He went to page 450. 10 results on one page. It was on page 43. He was also on the top of Google. He was also the top on MSN.com. I mean, the tippy top. They also debuted a map application inside their product, right? Worked on the first day. No problem. Apple spends $3.5 billion. I'm still going to railroad tracks when I go to my friend's place in LA. I think it's probably fixed now, but I won't be using an Apple phone in my lifetime. But then Facebook, in my opinion, just from the power deduction, starts pulling a huge scam. They start creating fake users, inflating falsely their membership account. But you might think, well, now, wait a minute. That's impossible, dude. How would they do that? How would they get fake people's faces? We know that a small group of people use superheroes for their faces. But here's the thing. When you search on Google or most platforms for some person, place, or thing, what's happening without you really realizing it? You are being directed to results that belong to your country code. I would get results in the United States of America. Now, if I am searching on a Russian beauty queen or some, you know, race car driver, F1 race car driver, that's a little bit different because there are sites inside the United States that cover those famous people. But I typically don't go to their personal websites unless it links off of something like Wikipedia, and then I start getting a site in Russian or German or whatever it is, and the site's kind of slow. So, what if you can't see anyone in Norway? What if you can't see anyone in different countries when you try to look up whether or not someone is real or fake? Because Facebook has people from all different countries. You get them sneaking into your site constantly, trying to be your friend. Never speak a word. What they are doing to create fake accounts is they are scraping real people's photos from some country in, say, Uganda. They then create a fake account, and they might switch what African country they're from, so you don't have any like breadcrumb back to it, but they may even leave the information the same. You have no, I mean, a lot of these people have languages that you can't even type. What if it was all in Chinese, Mandarin, or Cantonese? You can't type it on your keyboard unless that's where you're from. And there's billions of people over there, so you're not going to find anybody. So they're brilliant at it. Then they started offering advertisements to boost your post, to bring people into your groups, and you get all these people liking your stuff, supposedly looking at your ads, but they're all fake people. Burning up your advertising dollars, putting billions in their bank, nothing has occurred, your product doesn't sell, and your group, even though it might have hundreds of thousands of followers that you've paid for with ads, you post something and less than a fraction of a percent ever view a post. It's in your insights. It's free. You're not saying you paid me $10 to see this post. So that company eventually will be caught for creating hundreds of millions, if not billions, of fake accounts to create a false sense of value for their site, to illegally burn ad revenue, making their stock go up, lying to their shareholders, which, you know, hey, if your stock goes up, they're not going to complain, right? So that's the foundation. A bunch of companies that were put together by these nefarious folks. And again, like Instagram gets swallowed up. Other products get swallowed up by these companies. Again, Instagram, I don't think it's really playing a big role in the issues that we're concerned about, right? I have seen a 4-hour documentary done by a former intelligence agent online. We can't find it anymore. But it was using a school shooting and showing us the multiple layers of dissemination of social media data. And it's basically its neural net, its artificial intelligence gathering of all that information at several stages of percolating the data up. And it's masterful. These people aren't playing games, man. They have figured out how to manipulate the public during crises. We know nowadays we've had at least 2 mass shootings where the perpetrator changed their profile from a fictional character, having never posted their real identity. During the shooting, all of a sudden shows up with the person they're going to patsy on the profile. And then, of course, after the shooting, this manifesto comes out that they've written, very much like Lee Harvey Oswald's diary that's written all in one shot, never changing a writing utensil. So the dude never moved from a pen to a pencil, from a black ink pen to a blue ink pen. It's all scripted in a way that the writing is all kind of slanted perfectly. I mean, it's masterfully done. You know, some successful people will tell you that you should be the very best at what you do. Not a bad piece of advice. But a lot of smart people will tell you in the end, when they have nothing to lose, they say, look, all I ever did was be good enough, which to them meant better than anything else that had been released to date. Because you don't need to, you know, in say 1980, you're doing something in the public eye and you're trying to get attention with your art, you're expressing yourself, you don't need to beat someone in 2020. You only got to beat everybody in 1980. So based on the intellectual capacity of people in 1980, you have a certain task on your hands. In 2020, you can adjust it. With the internet, everybody's getting sort of their the air taken out of their balloon or the air from their wings taken out because they can always find someone out there who is 10 levels higher than they are. My advice is, if you're going to be an artist, do look around a little bit, but overall do what you do and keep your head down and do what entertains you. Try to be the most intelligent, intellectual person possible, and I guarantee if you can impress that mind, you're going to have customers lining up. You just will. But I digress, right? I don't think it's a big mystery that social media is destroying the planet. It really is. As much as there's a good thing in there, there's a double helping of bad stuff going on. And it's sort of like, it's almost like social evil pornography for your mind. Because what's pornography? It has its lure, but it completely screws with your head. The more you go in, the more you're damaged. It's almost like smoking cigarettes, where they say for every year in smoking, you need at least 2 to 3 years out to repair your lungs and your body. Because you're inhaling all that stuff on your lung, coating your sacs with all this goop, bad for you. Same thing with social media. You go in and you hear these messages, and you'll hear these gems that you can't unhear. And they may be true, and they may be untrue. You know, if you're a white person in America, you probably didn't hear that someone was racist against you. You may have assumed it here and there, but you can run around this country, and because it's predominantly white at this point, you, and again, there's a lot of races that just get called white and whatever, but it, you know, we're not talking about actual pigment color when I say white, European descent. And they don't worry about it. They go on and live their life. They don't wake up feeling defeated or anything. But if you're different than a European descent and you're here, you do wake up with this sense that someone said something about you. They're going to say something about you. They have said things about you. And you have to get up and ignore it so you can go live your life. And eventually you get so successful that you don't even care anymore what anyone ever said about you or saying about you, whatever. That's their problem. And that's what you realize as you grow up. All that's their problem, not your problem. If you're a good person, I'm calling you a bunch of names. It's my problem. I got the issue. And thankfully, I've let you know that I'm an idiot, you know. But social media, initially, in all my experience watching it, was loosely populated by news organizations. News organizations were still trying to figure out a way to survive online without creating a big loss leader to hopefully make you watch television at some point. Because of internet services like Netflix, whether you hate them or love them, Hulu, Apple, Prime, anything, plus your own collection, you're starting to watch, probably by 2010, only what you want to watch when you want to watch it. You buy your favorite show, you download it whenever you got time, and you might watch it on your iPad, your tablet, your phone, or your computer, your laptop, or your desktop, or your TV. Now it's all integrated and sold with the television. So why would you ever turn on network news or cable television? Why would you ever do it? Everything's over the internet and everything's on demand. Well, these companies aren't sleeping. Make sure you understand that. There are global forces that will control the way that news is disseminated to us. It is the most important thing. But here's what's interesting. A lot of us started seeing this about the end of the 90s, early 2000s. We started seeing networks that had enjoyed, you know, 100% prominence, just like when the 70s went into the 80s in America. We went from 3 to 4 channels to 100 channels just immediately. By 1985, homes in the Midwest had 100 channels on their TV. And not ShamWow commercial channels like Dish TV, I mean, whatever. I mean, these channels that are horrible, these services that are horrible, they're selling you advertisement, and maybe you get some cable with it. But by the end of the 90s, early 2000s, again, we saw folks like the major mass media organizations starting to struggle. People starting to talk to each other online. Video services started to bloom about 2004, 2005. Google tries to jump in and displace YouTube. But apparently, what's really strange for my engineering friends, we don't understand why Google couldn't figure it out. They had the search engine, they had maps, and the video thing was simple. They just couldn't figure out the interface to the service. It was awful. I mean, it was the worst programming of anything that Google ever did, and so they just bought YouTube. Ooh, well, that purchase is very similar to the purchase of Reuters over AP. Reuters being a classical European control apparatus of reality. AP being another global organization. The consolidation of the two and making sure that every news network that wants to report international news will always say no comments at the bottom of the article on your website. Even if you have comments features, you got to turn those off. And you have to put either at the top or the bottom where you got it. It's either going to be from our Reuters division or from our AP division. Control, control, control. For my money, I think the history goes like this. Between 2005 and 2010, the networks panicked hard. Zygmunt Brzezinski doing his little speech in New York with a guy from, I think, wearechange.org or change.org or something like that. It's the blonde-haired kid from Brooklyn. He busted that speech that Zygmunt was giving. And Zygmunt was saying, we've lost control. And we got to do everything we can to get it back. And so they hunkered down. They brought in their geniuses, real geniuses. They went to the big tech companies and bought them out behind the scenes. Some of them they already owned. But they're like, get Instagram under one of our big tech envelopes here because there can't be a method of communicating that we don't control. Meanwhile, China's coming in with WhatsApp and WeChat, controlling their folks, and then we bring them in because, you know, some of our leaders really love China. Facebook continues to go like a monster. They invent their own language on top of JavaScript called React. Twitter, well, Twitter's Twitter. Does what it does. So here's the thing. What's the archetypal functional model of Facebook versus Twitter? Well, Facebook's all about harvesting you, which is why your data was sold to Cambridge Analytics. They're selling you out, just like the data in the fictional series Westworld, which I just mentioned. Okay, Twitter, what's that all about? That's about instantaneous gratification and instantaneous brainwashing using the loyalty model that built up over, apparently, about 60 years prior. By 2010 to 2015, there's a massive movement to get all these networks prominently pushed into the Twitter apparatus. Not only that, but then arranging it such that Twitter is loyal to them because it's all one group of folks, right? Isn't it weird that you can post something on Twitter and you get this violation? If the same information is posted by a network, it's instantaneously true, but it's the same information. And someone says there isn't a global cabal. Give me a break. Now, a friend of mine reminded me of something I used to say. We had an 8-hour script session on Friday, and she said something brilliant that I used to say to you guys, and I have to make sure that we understand this because it's an important distinction when it comes to these cabals that we think of. Now, there's sort of your conspiracy purists who will not have thought this through, and they may actually believe what I'm about to say deep down inside, but I think we all forget to say it every once in a while, which is there are multiple factions in the world that are at this controlling level. They are divided in two distinct groups. There are more metrics of division, but the two main ones that you have to, that's important to know, I think, is that one is a location. There are cabals that help run Russia. There are cabals that help run the European communities. The Queen is her own little cabal, And then you've got the United States with its own cabal. So there are, and it goes all over the world. Asia has its cabal, right? So there's that one. Within that, you have historical cabals. So you have your money changer bankers, which are the second wave of control for Europe. The previous initial controlling apparatus, which helped found America, is your Masons. They went first because building things was the big magic trick back in the day. Once they built society to be able to live together, water wells, buildings with more than one story. At the same time, government apparatuses come in, and then you have an economy. Once you get an economy, and they tried several different economies. Again, go watch Bill Still's video on YouTube called The Money Changers. He'll teach you about all kinds of tally sticks and that kind of stuff. You will learn where it all came from. Well, Friday the 13th is the attempt to wholesale slaughter the Masons from the money changers. They knew this was going to happen on this Friday the 13th date. The Masons need to convince the money changers that they've been wiped out, so they leave a bunch of their people where this massacre is going to happen, while a bunch of them retreat to Scotland and a few other places. And then eventually it's sort of all kind of, well, you got us on that one, but we still control a shit ton of the world. And then, of course, our forefathers were heavy-duty Masons. What's confusing about it is you look at things like the Google Mail logo, and it is a Mason apron. So they seem to have figured out a way to come together, negotiate, and work together. Sort of like maybe the Central Intelligence Agency might work with some mafia around the world to get something done. They're not part of the same payroll system, but they'll work together to benefit their agendas. So there can be moments when these cabals work together, but there are, I think, some serious changes going on in the last 5 years. Now, I hear stories, and you know, I probably should have said this in other episodes, but you know, Vladimir Putin supposedly has pushed out anyone related to those money changer groups. I don't know if he's ever taken positions against the Masons, but he's said he'll arrest George Soros if he's ever caught on Russian land, supposedly kicked out the Rothschilds. So he's made moves to say, we have our own thing going. We are still evolving as a country, like all modern countries. And so we want total control over that evolution process. We're not perfect. We got regions that just got cars 10 years ago. And so we got a lot of growing up to do. And we don't need your influence messing with our people. We're trying to spread prosperity all over the place. And again, if you ever take a look at Moscow videos in 2020, or 2019 at least, you'll find out that it looks like Dubai or Rodeo Drive on a car show day. I mean, it's like, the amount of money in that city is unprecedented. Now, most intelligent people on planet Earth can sense more than they can explain. And I'm one of them. We can sense more than we can explain. What does that mean? Well, you can sense global agendas. You're not quite sure exactly what those global agendas are heading towards, what their end goal is. Sometimes it stinks so bad you know exactly what they're doing. Other times you see things and you're like, why would they be doing that? That's really strange. And it sticks in your head and it sits there for weeks. And you try to talk to people smarter than you and more informed than you in a particular area at least. And you're like, okay, that kind of makes sense. I get it. And you just put that in as a big maybe. You're not quite sure. Again, with our brain trust for Deep Thoughts Radio University, what we do is put something in the visible reality meets theory. Right? So the theory has to predict reality, predict it, meaning you know what's going to happen, right? That's a great thing about like physics or electronics, right? Like I've been saying in episodes, hey, if they say you drop that bowling ball from the Leaning Tower of Pisa, it's going to hit the ground. That's what happens. If you stand underneath it, you're going to have a hell of an epiphany. Reminds me of one of my favorite jokes. You know, what was the first thing that went through the fly's mind when he hit the windshield? His ass. So by 2015, for sure. And especially by 2020. Okay. By January 1st, 2020. Social media was locked and loaded, baby. We've seen it over Trump's administration. Love or hate that guy, forget that dude ever existed in terms of your opinion of him. But just look at what happened during his 4 years. For people who still walk around, I haven't heard this in quite a while, but people used to accuse him of being a part of the cabal. And you're sitting there because he's rich and he's had to borrow money here and there. And because, you know, he knew Jeffrey Epstein. You know, Epstein would go to all these palatial things. And let's just remind ourselves the second that Epstein invited him and his wife to a party and he walked in the door and found out he was using his daughter to bring in a bunch of teenage girls. He just turned around, walked out, scheduled an interview with New York Times. And then he made sure he was able to say in the interview that Epstein likes him young. And then he barred Epstein from Mar-a-Lago for life. Boom. I've been around enough of my celebrity clients, enough to know that a random person can walk up to any one of my friends and say, do you mind if I get a picture with you? They'll say yes. On occasion, they'll get them twice. Even parties, man. My buddy met, I won't even mention his name, but big celebrity, but no one usually knows his face, but this guy knew his face. He met him at a car dealership, invited him up to that night to his house with a big party we were having, and the guy turned out to be a drunk. He was a racist. He was just the most uncouth piece of shit human being, and we got him out of the house, and he was sent an email or a text or whatever saying, you're never invited here again. You were absolutely an asshole, which I'm sure that guy's probably put a little trophy on, printed it out and put it in a frame on his wall. So you can get approached by anybody. And the more that you're in these engaging environments where you're going to a celebrity event, you know, it's guilty by association. It's terrifying to think that you would have to after succeeding in some talent that you have. Just take yourself. Pick whatever talent you ever wanted to be a celebrity with, and realize that if you, because you know of the Epstein story, you now know that you can't allow people to walk up to you. You can't just have photographs taken. If you're in a crowd walking from one room to another, you do not make eye contact with people, smile at people, because those photographs could be harvested. And with Epstein, he had a group of people where no one knew what the hell he did. He was totally rich, supposedly. And people are introducing him saying he's a great guy. Maybe you guys can do business together and you've had some really good runs. Maybe you've made some critical dollars off little sessions like that. And it just turns out to be super bad. I mean, who would ever predict a guy like that ever existed at the level he existed? He's an anomaly, man. It's bad news. But why do you think, you know, NATO exists? Why do you think the UN exists? Why do you think the EU exists? Why do you think the Trilateral Commission, the CFR exists? Why do you think the Bilderberg Group exists? These are all organizations that are kept together to make sure that these different chapters of the world cabal stay together as much as possible. And, you know, it's all bait and lure and bait and trying to pull people in for their benefits. And so the more your enemy knows something about you, it's like a big book of needful things by Stephen King. Let me remind you, if you haven't read the book, some of you have already heard this story. A dude moves into a little town, starts a pawn shop. But when you walk in the pawn shop, there's nothing there except the one thing that you would do anything for, a relic from your past. A preacher walked into the pawn shop and saw a nail, I believe, and a piece of wood from the Noah's Ark. One guy had a toy car thing. One guy had a foxtail that he used to have when he was a young guy. And so they would do anything for that thing. In their brain, it's worth, it's a priceless thing. And so when the guy, he says, when they say, well, how much is it? And he goes, I don't have any money. It's a little town. We don't make any money. And the old man who owned the place just said, well, you know, it's okay. Whatever you got in your pocket, just give it to me. Some cases was a few bucks. Some cases was a few coins. He said, here's what I need you to do. I need you to go and do this one little thing. It seemed like a really benign thing. But what it was a collection of things that if all completed, the town went into civil war against itself. The man who owned the pawn shop was the devil. So now imagine that you are a faction of a cabal. What's the one thing you need to keep operating? Money. What if money's a fiat system? Well, then you're going to have to kiss the ass of the World Bank and the IMF to make sure that you don't lose your allocation of money creation, that you can always borrow money when you need it at a good rate, and that you have some sort of control over your country's gross national product so you can sell something to pay it back. Well, we know how the economic hitman talked about taking over South America with toxic loans. Same thing happened to Russia after the coup. Go read Michael Rupert's book, Crossing the Rubicon. It'll blow your mind. And so at all times, the most powerful cabals, which are the ones that control Europe and largely America, and this can, you know, it's Canada and Australia as well, they know what you want or what each other wants. They know where there's problems, and they can orchestrate problems. Let me give you a little analogy so that you understand. I mentioned several times this book that is, if you ever want to understand your perspective as a business owner or as an employee, you got to read this book. It's going to change your life. It's Robert Kiyosaki's book called The Cash Quadrant. Just get it on tape. He reads it to you, and he's great. But cash quadrant, quadrants are four corners, right? There's an E, an S, a B, and an I. And this will teach you how the globalists work. And this all folds into the underbelly, the massive underbelly of the iceberg that pops out of the water and becomes social media at the top. E, first one you learn about, you are an employee. Your mentality is simply going to work and getting a paycheck, providing a service and getting a paycheck. You didn't create the company. You have no idea what's going on above or below. Maybe you own some stock. You got a 401k, but you have no idea what it's like up there in the big executive room. And that's your mentality. Quite frankly, there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all. Nothing wrong with any of these, really. But then the next one is S. S is sole proprietor. You are now home, generally by yourself, and you're providing a service. You're an accountant, you're a photographer, you're a musician, whatever it is you do. You do that by yourself. But to say you hire an employee, then you become a B, a business owner. You probably have some partners. Whether they be shareholders or not, it's up to you. Don't do it. And you have employees. So now a B has some S's underneath. And then there's the I. And this is why I'm mentioning this book to you, because this will help you understand how big boys work in the world. And this is something that, again, I don't know, even if you had a Harvard business degree, if you understand. Actually, Harvard, you would get it, because Harvard's whole thing is, on the first day, they tell you, we are not teaching you how to be an employee. We're teaching you how to be a business owner. We're teaching you how to be autonomous. And an I is the final step. Let me give you the layman definition that I had for several years myself. Here's what I thought an I was. This scenario exists, but it's not what an I really is. You have a brilliant idea. You're an E wanting to become an S, or you're an S wanting to expand and be a B, and you know you need a bunch of money to make something happen. You're going to make something. Need some money. Maybe it's $100,000, maybe it's $1 million. Your vision of an I is someone who has made some money somewhere in their lifetime, whether it be inheritance, a lottery ticket, or they had a big business, a B, and they have so much money, they can part with a little bit of it, which is the definition of capitalism. Nothing more. You need to borrow to get your idea going. But you think the whole thing is they give you money, they surrender it to you, maybe with some stipulations. There's definitely some interest. You got to pay it back. But everyone's taking a risk. You could fail. They don't get their money back. You don't get any thing, but you got a load of salary. And that's the extent of what I thought an eye was. Just a dude who's rich, who's going to loan you some money with some stipulations, and you get it, your business started. Now, what an eye really is the following. An eye is someone who goes out and let's say you bring them an idea. I'll give you a real scenario with my own company, my own last startup. A partner of mine and I went to an LED company and asked them, can you refresh that screen at 120 hertz? And they said, yes. And we said, okay, then we'd like to have you loan us a screen. And we are going to turn that into the best 3D movie theater anyone's ever seen in their life. It could also be used in amusement parks and homes and installations. And they went, what? And we said, yeah, watch. Okay. We got a box. We rigged it together. They saw 3D on their screen for the very first time ever. It blew their mind. So we've got a manufacturer, an OEM, who's willing to make this screen for us. We have the business plan. I designed this gigantic platform that was like Netflix. But we needed money. We needed probably, we thought for the first phase, $7 million to build a gigantic screen that was going to cost us anywhere from $1 to $3 million. It's going to be massive, beautiful, amazing. Still small when it comes to a movie theater perspective. But we were going to surround you with a 220-degree screen such that you couldn't really, other than you looking straight up, which we had a solution for that too, but you couldn't exit the world with your mind. And it's coming out of the wall. It's not being projected on the wall. And it's full 3D. It's the most amazing stuff you've ever seen. We brought through everybody. I've talked about it several times. So we go and talk to some investors. They're immediately interested. I'm looking at the hardware. I'm redesigning everything, man, making it cheaper, easier, faster. It was going to kick ass. It was going to revolutionize the entire LED screen technology, period. But my investor came in. He goes, you know, what are the different sectors that you guys see yourself penetrating? And I had it all lined up to match the technology as it was being invented. We were just going to move into various markets. But during our presentation, I started showing video games on the screen in 3D. It was blowing people's minds. Well, the investors started looking at that and going, you know what? I think that we're still quite a ways away from getting it into movie theaters, not because the technology wasn't ready, because the movie studios weren't ready to make a negative that big. And he's absolutely right. I think I told him that. So he goes, let's go for games. So we built, well, we designed, I did it in 3D, some smaller units where a single individual gets into this 220-degree cylinder. And we designed it so you can network racing games with your friends. And imagine a race car to your left is really to your left. When a car crashes in front of you and the car flips at your face, it's coming at your face. And if it misses you, because algorithmically we don't let it smash into your face or hits the front of your car or whatever, it's going around. Imagine being in a NASCAR and you're inside the NASCAR, like all the beams and everything is, they're right where they're supposed to be. And we called this Stadion, and it was a company called Immerse, spelled really weird, which freaked a bunch of people out. It was really funny. It was a beautiful logo. But our investor guy comes home. He goes home. He's 70 years old, man. He goes home. This is how innovative this guy was. He went home and said, you know, I think I can buy leases on old Walmarts, you know, those kind of stores, and we can go in there, scrape it out, blow paint all over it, put all this crazy 3D, LEDs all over the place, making it look amazing. We could have DJ booths with screens up above that are, you know, simulcasting people's games. We can come up with passes. You can just get a pass, go in for the whole day, just like Disneyland, and just have a blast. You just get in line. While you're doing that, you're playing coin-op games. You're eating food, drinking. It's going to be amazing. We're going to put them in all major cities. We're going to put them in 30 major cities and then another 150 in the next year. It was going to be a massive endeavor and just completely fun. I have all the video game contacts, with all the CEOs, so we were going to be good. Turns out the screen technology wasn't quite as dialed in as it needed to be. We could have made it work, but the dude we kept ordering the screens from, his company just kept imploding. It's really sad. And the dude wouldn't give us exclusivity on gaming for his platform. He had no other customers interested in doing it, but he was just greedy. And now he's about out of business. It's just super sad. He had some integrity issues too. It's really, really sad. I went and worked with him for a year to try to clean up his company. And as of today, most of all of his OG employees are gone. It's nuts. And the one employee that's destroying his company is still in charge. I mean, it's just like, this is the way the world works, right? But my investor dreamed up something and then used us to see if it could come true. That's the difference with the cabals of the world. They engineer things to happen. And you guys already know this, but you may not have connected the two. The big giant North American highway that was coming through, right? Texas started building it. It's in Texas, like 10 lanes one way, owned by the king and queen of Spain through a shell company out of Australia. People in Texas are paying tolls to the king and queen of Spain right now to drive on that highway. Unbelievable. Well, that highway is going to be, you know, a big cross, big plus sign all across the United States to farm in cheap products. China's going to send their products to Mexico, and Mexico's going to sell them into the United States with almost no tariffs. This is a plan that's 15 years old. A bunch of local newspapers tried to report on the Texas corridor. And what happened? The king and queen of Spain put more shell companies in to buy up those newspapers and immediately fire the reporters that wrote articles about their highway. So you wouldn't know what's happening until it's already built. Someone imagineered that thing together, and it's happening. That's a long foundational story to show you what goes on behind the scenes of these social media things. Don't worry about Jack Dorsey. Don't worry about Mark Zuckerberg. Don't worry about the one guy that's the only guy left from the original Google story, which was a complete carbon copy of the Yahoo story. Two guys from Stanford that make a search engine. Well, that happened legitimately with Yahoo and was then mirrored to create the story for Google's entry. Because, hey, why not just copy organic reality, right? Velcro is not something from the Roswell crash on little tiny spacesuits. It's actually a natural formation on a flower that uses it to pollinate. Copy nature. And just to drive another point home about how those intelligence agencies work, creating stories. We don't know if both the stories I'm about to tell you are both fake. I think they're both fake because both men were targets for various reasons. So John Lennon in the 70s, if you go back and look at his interviews on YouTube, he ended up really hating the Central Intelligence Agency. And he kept saying that they were the most horrible thing in these interviews on sidewalks in New York, saying they started all the wars, we have to get rid of them. And he's writing all, you know, give peace a chance songs and stuff like that. Good guy, really good guy. So he's a target. He's an influencer and he's a target. Plus he's rich as shit, right? So what was the story of his death? Well, he's coming out of the apartment building that he owns, this amazing, amazing building. And a guy, I forget his name. Sorry, I'm not a giant Beatles fan. He had just finished a payphone call, supposedly down the street, like a block away. And he was telling his girlfriend, you know, please come back to me or love me or whatever, or a girl. I don't even think she was his girlfriend, but she didn't want anything to do with him. He was psychotic. But he says, you know, soon you're gonna know my name. I'm going to be famous, and then you're going to want me. The story is, as he walks to the edge of the building, and there's this little exit ramp. It's like almost like a subway entry to the left side of the building if you're looking at the face of it. And as I was told when I was there in New York, they said he came up those stairs right there, and this is where the guy opened the gun and, you know, killed him. So guy calling his girlfriend, trying to impress her, kills John Lennon. Okay. Ronald Reagan's visiting this building in Washington, D.C. He is exiting the building. Hinckley, remember the Hinckley family and the Bush family are best friends. Hinckley is in a mental institution, as I know it, up in Colorado. But it was not like he was a major risk to anybody, but he was visiting his family for holidays, and he could go have dinner with his family, but he always went back to this mental institution. Somehow that dude has flown to Washington, D.C. Ronald Reagan had just become president and was investigating the Federal Reserve Bank and wanted to know how much interest versus principal that we had paid on our debt since they were formed in 1913 with the 16th Amendment. He got the answer back, well, we don't really know, but I guarantee you we haven't paid any principal debt since 1952. It's the report he gets back. Well, he's exiting this building. Hinckley opens fire, shoots a Secret Service guy, shoots Brady in the head, and supposedly a bullet bounces off the car and jumps into Reagan's gut. I personally don't think he was ever shot. But they push him in the car. And what was the story for Hinckley? He is trying to impress Jodie Foster. Oh, wow. That's only like 4 months since John Lennon shot. Same exact archetype of a story. Played twice within 6 months. How convenient. Well, we know with a lot of the protests that have been going on the last couple of years, the archetype's the same. Organizations with no demands, burning places down, showing a complete lack of leadership, which means they're just slaves to whoever's putting out the Craigslist ad to make a few bucks. Come down and protest, and you'll be this. We know that in case of like, was it the Charlottesville thing? The people there said, you know, there's one set of buses that came in and the same, the white supremacist people came off the same bus as the Antifa people. And then they had this big scuffle. People have analyzed every single cell phone of that footage to prove that they walked together for a long time, then split up and they had an issue. Then this weird car shows up and rams everybody. And the car paint job changes when they find the guy. I mean, it's just, it stinks to high heaven. Again, no one's quite sure what the hell's going on, but we don't buy the official story. But where's the official story coming from? It's coming from those dark platforms to program your mind, to give you a reaction to what? Be your best? No. You go off and become reactionary yourself. To the degree the information is accurate, maybe you calm down, maybe get more irate. Who knows? When this George Floyd thing happened, something amazing happened in my personal life. This thing happens, and one of my most liberal friends in Hollywood, okay, who believes everything that they tell him to believe. I mean, it is unreal how unbelievably efficient this guy is, to the point he can't have a conversation with you without bringing up these crazy agendas based on wacky science and stuff, right? He sends me an email and he says, well, you know, that whole thing was a setup and it's to start a race war in the United States. I'm surprised you didn't tell me first. I'm like, what? I wrote him back. I literally said, what have you done with my friend? You know, it got so thick and so absurd that he could see it. And he was told by people that he respected on his leftist side, this is all a setup. And you find out the guy died of fentanyl, right? Situation screwed up, of course. But my buddy doesn't think it was legit. My buddy thinks the cop was paid off, and whatever happened to that guy, right? How come the guy's brother-in-law is standing next to him as some trainee? I mean, it's just like, it stinks to high heaven. But how do they create these crazy situations that make no sense on paper, and somehow the world believes it? Social media. The lie of social media. That is like a triple, quadruple entendre if someone said the lie of social media. The platforms themselves and their history and their intent is a lie. Their founders are propped up fake human beings. I mean, they're potentially kind of real people, but their stories are fake. There's that famous interview with Zuckerberg, right? He is taking an interview at famous Bay Area show, and I can't remember the freaking guy's name. I used to remember it. It's this older guy with shorter white hair. And this is when Zuckerberg used to wear a hoodie everywhere he went. It was this cool hipster thing he was doing. Man, I don't go anywhere without my hoodie. Man, it's making a statement, bro. And they asked him about security and sharing the information. And he starts sweating at a level I don't think I've ever seen anything other than cinematics, right? Where someone is in a fictional movie and there's a prop person spraying him with the bottle. This dude has sweat running down his face in, I don't know, 30 seconds. He has to take his hoodie off because he can't breathe. It's almost as if he thought he was being set up to be exposed or something. I don't know. Since then, he's shown up without that hoodie several times. Computers have been co-opted since the very, very beginning. Operating systems have been co-opted from the earliest convenient moment that they could be co-opted, meaning they are there to harvest your data, get it organized such that someone can backdoor your computer and get everything that they need, from your photos to your data, everything. I've got a video that's way back in season one. Go find the remastered version on deepthoughtsradio.com, but the name of the episode is How They Spy on You. What's hilarious about it is that if anyone's ever been impressed with Snowden, which is such a pun of his last name, it appears that even Snowden doesn't know how the system works. It's amazing. He knows what his tools did at the agency that he was working for, but I will straight up tell you how they get your data. And it's so diabolical, but so simple at the same time. And I'll give you one that's kind of on the fringe of what they do, but once you think it through, it'll all make sense to you. Let's say that somebody wanted to get your entire contents of your hard drive, you know, sent to their computer so they could take a look at it, which means you're a target that has something on your computer. You're not just an average citizen unless they want to turn you into a patsy. Then they will grab your information. But let's say you have like a, I don't know, 5 terabyte drive. Maybe you got several terabytes of drives and they're all hooked up to your main desktop or computer, your laptop, whatever. But you're thinking that would take a long time because I have a really slow internet connection. Maybe I only have a 30 meg per second line. Now, with wireless technology, there is a limit to how much that data can be transferred at. But now let's say you had a 100 megabit line. So you only 10 megabytes per second, but your network card can do 30. They can take your internet connection to your house and specifically for your IP, jack it all the way up to the maximum of your hardware's capabilities. And they can start dragging down your drive the second that they know you went to bed. 8 hours is a long time, man, at full bore. You won't even know what occurred. The stuff goes out the door on your computer, and it's going below any monitoring loop that any software could monitor on your computer. So even if you had a log on your computer saying, hey, tell me what, you know, what data went out the door, they know how to go underneath router hardware. They know how to get right out the door without even lighting up the transmission LED on the card itself. They're not idiots, man. And they built everything. That would be a super extreme case, and you'd be a very coveted target to have that happen to you. But that's what can happen. Anything that's technically possible is being done to get your data. So what do? Social media is out there. You're already addicted to it. Don't deny it. None of us should. Well, the way I've transferred all my social media is to say, one, I wear sunglasses a lot. But two, my Facebooks are all either posts to you guys, to this channel. You can go watch it on BitChute if you want. My personal social media is just all the photographs I already had in before I realized what the hell was going on. And then just bullshit. Stuff that is personality-based posts. I don't get into anything that's dark because I don't think anyone needs that in their life. Twitter, I try to like get in there and put some logic into some people's posts as I see people trying to manipulate people really hard with really bad algorithms of thinking. And I'll just get in there and just put the flip right in those comments. At least that's what I'm trying to do. And some months I'll post 20 times and other times I'll post 2 times. And this is outside the posts that share the actual episodes from this show. Now, if you know the show, you know I'm also a big fan of like Minds.com, but there's none of you on there. Like Tim's on there. That's about the only dude that comes over and likes my videos over there. It's a true blockchain Facebook free speech zone. It is prettier, in my opinion, than Facebook. Very, very functional, but no one's there. So I'm not going to waste my time posting a bunch of stuff over there just yet. There's Gab. Still doesn't work for shit. Wano Savin's platform, I guarantee you, will be dead in 2 months. He's already blocked me from posting anything new or making a comment on anything. He's supposed to be a free speech guy. And I've never done anything except that recent chemtrail video to even mention his name. And I'm sure I can't even post that video up there because I didn't have the right to post it. So it's just a crappy platform. It just is. Parler, it's history. And when we learned that it was owned by one of these deep staters, we were done. Dan Bongino has been duped into investing. I mean, wow, another guy has cancer. Talk against them in an influential way, you'll get sick. I guarantee you, if this channel had 10 million subscribers, I'd have people following me. And probably way before that, probably 500,000, I'd have a problem. But low count is actually kind of cool because I'm no significance to them. And this brings up a great analogy that the old master turned really strange guy, Alex Jones, said one time. And he, I don't know if someone told him this story, but I've mentioned it a couple times on the show. It's very important for you to think about this. And maybe this is useful for you to mention it to other people. I don't know. It's up to you. But he gave a great analogy. Imagine one of those old steamboats back in the day in the 1800s where they used to play poker on them. There's still a few in this world. But send yourself back to the Tombstone days, right? 1870s. And there's a bunch of super rich, super powerful people playing poker. These cabal people. And you know that you're there. And they let you in. And you hate these people. And while they're playing poker, you walk around the game. And you're like, you're a scumbag because of this, this, and this. And you're this, this, and this. You can walk around that game. And you can insult them all you want. And they don't care. You're nobody. And they know that, so they don't care. I mean, I'm sure you could get to a point where Wild Bill would draw on you, right? Wild Bill. Go see Deadwood if you haven't seen it yet. Oh, my God. What a great show. But the story ends like this. The analogy ends like this. If you screw up the game, you tell someone what card someone has. You know, you walk behind someone's hand and go, oh my God, you're going to blow all these guys away. And everyone folds and they lose money. You're dead. Instantaneously. So you can complain all you want in this world. Just don't affect their game. And you won't become a target. Now, part of it is, and I'm not telling you to do that, to give up or anything. But just understand there's sort of a human shield going on at any one point in time in social media. Take a Candace Owens. She definitely has eyes on her, and I'm sure she's aware of it. Trump obviously knew he had eyes on him, and they just tried to kill the guy in Florida. They flew a drone with a gun on it and shot the window, man. I mentioned that recently. So the more folks that are going out and really catching all the flack, right? They're over the target, so the flack is popping up, and they're getting it, right? They're going to distract away human resources from taking responses to anything that you do. The backside of it, which has far more targets and far more impact, is the censorship, where they've got artificial intelligence to look at what you're saying to then gag your channel, cancel you, accuse you of things you've never done without any explanation, and you get knocked off. That's how that works. And you know it. When I started MKUltra Radio, friends were like, aren't you afraid to say this stuff? And we were. We literally were. We're kind of like, you know, you got to have skin in the game. You just got to do it, man. What are you going to do? Let everyone else solve the problems, and then at the end, you're going to stand on the victory mound and put your fist in the air like you did something? No, you were a bitch during the whole thing. Nope, we got to put our skin in the game. And we are at a apex of participation. The cool thing about a red pill is that you can't be blue pilled after you're red pilled. You can be lobotomized, maybe. You can be killed. But you can't get that DNA out of a human being. Once they see any truths of the world that apply to them, they can't go backwards. And this is a spreading thing. The best thing about that guy that did this LARP, this Q LARP, is that at least he informed us a tremendous amount, and he got a bunch of people together to wake up. I mean, that one guy. And the problem is he has a bunch of hangers on. And it dawned on me today, this morning when I was getting ready. Q always said, look, don't listen to anyone else say that they're me. Anyone. Just listen to me. And if I don't say it, don't say that I said it. And a lot of things that he gets nabbed for are things that people said on his behalf. So 107 is violating that directive. Simon Parks is violating that directive. Charlie Ward is violating that directive. Although Charlie keeps a pretty good distance with what he says, I think he's invented some fun lies for everyone to enjoy. It's not that I don't respect what these guys are trying to do on one level at times. It's just it violates the directive. If that was the case, if these dudes were supposed to be listened to, then one, Q would still be posting, and two, his last post would say, these are my ambassadors, go. Nope. He disappeared on December 8th, and I doubt we'll ever see another post. And apparently, someone told me, and I forgot to mention this to you guys, the Acoon platform, I guess, is having huge issues, so him ever posting there again is probably not the case. So, I don't know. I mean, it's just a movie, man. We're just watching a movie, and we just don't know what the end of it is. So, I would say that if you have options to be on these platforms and not be on these platforms, I would say I can't find a single reason to be on Twitter at all. I think Instagram is probably the most pure. Again, post pictures of your life on these platforms. And again, if I post my face, I got my sunglasses on. But most of the time, I'm taking pictures of cool things in my world. You know, I'm privileged to live in a really cool place. I mean, I put a Coke can up there because my buddy used this weird cutter to cut the top off the can so you could drink it straight out of the can like a glass. I thought that was cool. If I go to a Ferrari dealership and there's like some amazing car in there, I take a picture of it. On Facebook, again, Beastie Boy videos, just basic stuff. Now, some of you are in different phases in your life. You got little kids and all that kind of stuff, and you're proud of your kids accomplishing things. Just be careful. You have to understand that the Home Shopping Network, for us, is buying a Gensu knife on TV. The Home Shopping Network for these Epstein guys is going into your social media profiles, finding your kids that look great, and putting an order in for them. And then they get snatched. That level of power is their intoxication. So be careful doing the JonBenet Ramsey thing with your kid. You know, unless you're a Delta Force guy or a Special Forces guy and you live in a neighborhood with all of your other buddies that have that capability of just knowing a freak when they walk down the street, don't be doing it. I mean, that's just my advice. Yeah, you're probably one in a billion, probably less than that with Epstein out there. And Epstein was only the pimp. People have this false sense of security that this guy died in a prison. And I mean, I don't think he died, but whatever. But he served customers, okay? Thousands and thousands of customers. Customers that we know and customers we don't know. But I guarantee you, if his whole Rolodex was an iceberg, the only names you've ever heard from this Q guy are the tip of the iceberg. A bunch of them are probably no names that just have some money. So don't feel secure that we've conquered that problem. The Mexican border, Biden has just turned it into a human trafficking border again. Be careful. Kids go both ways, you know. They come in and they go out. The ones that were here go out. The ones that were down there come up. So nobody's safe. Anyway, let me know what you think. How do we do this? And today it was announced that Trump is going to be creating his own social media platform. Regardless if you like the guy or hate the guy, here's the cool thing. There ain't going to be any fact-checking crap on there. I'm sure there'll be your standard, you know, don't use racist terms, that kind of thing. But, you know, if you're a Civil War soldier that wants to study the Civil War, no one's going to call you a white supremacist because you happen to study a battle where we didn't use any slaves to fight the war, you know, which has happened, you know. But if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. I'm going to give you the long bumper today because it's been a while. Our best video choices is obviously at the current point, YouTube, but your full-blown backup 1080p channel is BitChute. It's important you go up and sign up for BitChute just to give them your patronage. Those guys are so busy right now with so many customers, you can't get any tech support, and that's sort of good. All the other video options, I have been through them. They're all bullshit. Brighteon's a huge popularity joke. There's NewTube or brand new tube or something like that. Their site still crashes when you try to go to pro. I mean, these sites are horrible. So just those two. As far as audio, I did have a busted link for the Google platform for their podcasting. They moved it, and so I fixed that link. For social media, again, we have a locked Facebook group of some of the coolest freaking people on planet Earth. All different beliefs, but they all get along. It's really amazing. Again, I do a tiny bit of Twitter. Minds.com is my other go-to site that I really think is pretty and nice. Everything else is sort of secondary and just being tested. I did pull off 107 Daily because he censored me. I don't know if it's just a crappy platform, but people are posting every day and I can't post anything. Anything, okay? So I changed my name to Censored by 107. There is an all-new remastered season one, and that is because the initial one is pretty harsh, okay? I put the microphone way too close to my mouth, and I didn't take any of the pauses out, so when I'm taking drags on cigars and stuff, for those of you who want to know what it looks like, for me not to edit, just go look at old season one episodes. And you can use DuckDuckGo to find all my old stuff. The thumbnail for season one that's old is if I'm holding that stick up to my mouth and there's no flame on the end of the stick, that's the season one unedited. If it has the little flame on the end, that's the new one. The website has it all worked out for you, so you don't need to worry about it. But if you want to go and subscribe to that channel on YouTube, it's a different channel. Watch all videos and then just unsubscribe. You're good. We have a store. I have the I Like UFO shirt up there. And I'll tell you what. I had that shirt printed and I've worn it several times and it now is starting to get people to look at the shirt and go, oh my God, that's cool. The guy just got my car fixed. I believe his name is Dan. We got into a huge conversation because of that shirt. So it's a really cool starter and you can get it in a bunch of different formats, you know, hoodies and shirts and t-shirts and stuff. And I went ahead and just so you know, on the store, the whole thing, I've knocked down all their suggested prices by as much as I possibly can in terms of like, got to keep a little bit of profit for myself, but I'm losing at least 50% of the profit that they want on everything that I'm pitching up there. And I select just the premium cotton and the premium, all this stuff. So I've been pretty satisfied what's going on. I did add the new one, which is the Deep Thoughts University shirts and hoodies and that kind of stuff. Looks pretty cool. As soon as summer finally gets here, we're going to be showing it right here on this chair. Other than that, we have two ways to contribute to the page. We have a PayPal account, which people donate randomly to. That one has an ability to stay pretty anonymous, just so that you know. If you wanted to donate cash, but you don't even want to know, or especially me, that's the case. If you do donate, I put you in the credits forever. If your name is large in the credits, you're still contributing. Patreon, I've got a group of amazing followers over there. We're going to be doing face-to-face. I've already done one, so it's fantastic to meet you guys. And what that's going to be is over a certain threshold, probably at least 15, 20 bucks, that's when you're going to be able to get access to me personally. But because of everyone on there right now has been up there for quite a while, some folks are donating amazing amounts of money. One's 50 bucks a month. It was amazing. So, you know, this show takes a lot of time, let me tell you. And my dad just covered 25 sticks, so that's pretty cool. But anyway, take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you on the next Deep Thoughts. Over now. as Miss Possum comes by here. Maybe she'll get in the shot. Okay. It's the bonuses, man. That's why you keep coming back, right?